Also, I'm drinking wine and Coke.
What the fuck?
I am not shitting you.
I don't think you should put cocaine in your wine.
It makes it harder to snort, that's for sure.
Honey, hand me that funnel.
No. Just get a neti pot.
Now I'm imagining Kamen Rider G as a cocaine version of Kamen Rider G, and
not that different, is it?
Although I have to say, cocaine infused water instead of a neti pot to go right into your sinuses—that's a genius idea. My God, why didn't I ever think of that before? I've been doing cocaine wrong all these years.
Like, up the butt?
Wait, that's not the right way?
Cocaine-infused wine. Well, that's another one to add to the list.
Which
list? Reasons we'll be arrested someday.
Reasons why we can't have nice things.
Well, no, we know that already. That's Ken.
Superhero Time presents that one episode of Star Trek. With Chris.
I've been hiding under these stairs, and I love you.
Hey, Mickey.
He's the Data with a twitch and the knowledge of how to roofie an android.
Scott.
Excuse me, sir. Could your ass please stop for a while? Other diners are trying to enjoy their dinner.
And Fort Max.
Meanwhile, at the Hall of Justice...
This week on that one episode of Star Trek, Deep Space Nine. Finally.
Rim jobs.
Deep Space Fives.
With flip phones.
No, Star Trek Fives was the one where they went to the center of the galaxy and, you know.
Ah, yeah. So, I watched this episode last night, and my fiance watched it with me. And this is the first time she's ever watched Star Trek and went, you know what? That was actually really good. She was actually interested and invested in the story and the characters.
Wow.
It's almost like Deep Space Nine. It's a good series. It has a lot of good stuff.
I know. It's almost like it was well written and well acted and actually very good.
Also, we usually pick terrible episodes to watch.
That is all true.
Yes. But see, the thing is, our podcast is not exclusively about making fun of bad episodes. It's also recognizing good episodes that don't necessarily, you know, get a lot of attention.
Oh, I thought it was all about making fun of Hey Mickey.
That too.
All right.
Side benefits, you know.
That's why it's such a bad podcast, is because it doesn't do it very well.
Yeah, because if we did it well, we'd have to do it once, and then we'd be done.
That's why we had to bring Scott on the show. We needed somebody who could actually make fun of Mickey effectively, because, I mean, me and Fort Max don't have any chance of actually making fun of Hey Mickey.
That's true, because on the nerd pecking order, you're all about in the same level. which is like under Atomic Wedgie, but slightly above not a virgin anymore.
Slightly above going to hacking school.
I'll have you know, that's part of my job. I have to do that.
Yes, that makes it cooler.
So much cooler. I mean, it was funny, though, because I went to this hacking class, and the guy sitting next to me was, if you pictured a hacker from, like, 1998, that guy was sitting next to me.
Like you mean like one of the one of the throwaway characters from the first Transformers movie?
It was short, wide, had a brown hair pulled back in a ponytail, big, thick glasses with black rims, cargo shorts, a black T-shirt with some sort of video game reference on it.
Was it two? But did it? Okay, if it had a video game reference, but was it two things?
Yo, yeah. It was the mix. It was like Mario and something else. Yeah. I mean, he was the living embodiment.
It was Mario and Doctor Who, of course.
Right.
I need to make a Mario Speedwagon shirt someday.
No, you don't. You really don't.
That would, I mean, that on its own could be three things.
That's true. So even though she had no context for this episode, she actually really enjoyed it and was invested in the characters, knowing nothing about it. And I thought that was impressive.
To be fair, like, there's not a whole lot of context you need to get what the story's about.
Exactly.
And it's
again,
hard to not
well
be
written.
Captivated whenever Mark Alamo is on screen.
Yeah. Like, they did a... I mean, they'd cast him in Next Generation. We watched that episode. They knew what they were getting with him. They knew, you know... They had a good choice for recurring antagonist character. You know, he was, he was a really strong counterpoint to Sisko.
Gray lizard man sexy.
What's that like, voice?
Oh, damn.
Well, and just the way he delivers it.
Well, yeah, he's got a voice and his delivery is like a smooth cigar. It's all warm and smoky and a little sexy and just,
Yeah, he's great with dialogue.
He is. Well... He's a good actor.
I think it's the confidence he says everything with, where he knows he's the shit, and he doesn't prove it.
Yeah, he doesn't have to make any displays. You know, he doesn't have to shoot somebody or beat up Worf or anything to prove that he's tough.
He couldn't beat up Worf.
Anybody can beat up Worf, and we've seen it. You know it. Wesley could beat up Worf if they needed to prove something.
I would have liked if later on there was an opportunity where, like, Worf and Dukat were in a scene together, and Dukat just tried to punch Worf, and, you know...
Worf just caught his fist and crushed his hand?
Well, no, like, Worf's head turned a little from the impact, but, you know, like, it didn't bend back or anything, and he just kind of turns back around and smiles a little bit, and then, you know, you cut to a different angle, and Dukat's flying backwards.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of episode that sort of scene would have fit thematically, but it's a scene I would have liked to see happen.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be if it was if Dukat was going to be the antagonist of the episode.
Well, no, I mean, just overall, it has to fit the feel of the episode.
They're trapped in a safe together.
Ah, but the problem with that is there's not really that much room to have Dukat flying backwards comedically.
It's a big safe.
No, unless it's him flying, Dukat flying out of the safe.
Okay, so what? Okay, so like you know, let's split the difference here. They're trapped in the safe. The backhand thing happens. You see Dukat flying backwards, and you cut to the outside of the safe, and this little dent pops out of the side. with the forehead ridges, you know, spoon, yeah, perfect. Okay, so we are talking about
either that or you don't have the dent and it's just flattened his forehead ridges. And he just doesn't have them the rest of the series.
Well, no, I mean the rest of the episode. He can get that fixed later. Okay, so we're talking about the Deep Space Nine episode Indiscretion from season 3?
4.
4, thank you.
Season 4, episode 4.
So perfect. Is Discretion the name of the runabout they're in? Because they're in Discretion? No?
No, it's not named after a river.
Just for that, Scott. Episode summary.
Motherfucker.
It's amazing how Scott always gives me an opening to do that.
I've been quiet this whole time. Wait for these jerks to jump in.
But you just had to make that Indiscretion joke.
I had to say something eventually or I wouldn't get paid.
Paid?
All right, fine. I'll drive this garbage scowl into the nearest black hole.
What are you, Troy?
I can almost fill out a bodysuit like she does. Almost.
Oh, can you fill out the season one
bodysuit?
Fill out a
bodysuit like Pulaski does.
So like a bag of antlers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Bag of antlers. Put some cigarettes.
Just a bag of anteaters.
That would be lumpier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but they have those little weird tongues. All right. So, Kira is...
Pulaski.
Yeah.
Are we going back to the rim job discussion?
Do we have to right now?
Scott's
eating cream corn and getting rimmed.
I think we need to say that for Toast after hours.
Scott is just so spent from the rim job talk earlier.
With how late we're starting, this might as well be after hours.
Toast nights.
Because David Hasselhoff doesn't have a big enough paycheck yet.
Probably not anymore, no.
No. I hope he saved some of that Baywatch money.
He didn't.
He'll guest star in the movie.
Yeah, isn't he supposed to?
Whether they say he's supposed to or not, you know that he will.
Yeah.
Anyway, Scott, go.
So next on that one episode of Baywatch.
Oh, that'd be the worst.
So here they're running
ever.
Along the beach in slow motion for some reason, and this continues on for about 24 minutes. So let's just bask in the glow. All right. So we open up with Kira, who is apparently practicing some sort of Scientology, I guess. I don't know. I don't know religions. She's palming candles.
I think Ferengi religion would probably be more close to Scientology, since it's all about, you know, paying your way up to enlightenment.
Right. Oh, Jesus, you're right. Oh, space Jesus. So so she's trying to meditate. She just sits down. She just finished her chamomile tea. Just had a good bowel movement. She's getting ready to get started. And fucking Worf blips her and goes, you got a call. And she's like, oh, put it through.
That's right. You can tell this is early in season 4 because Worf barely appears in person.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of just has, you know, a token involvement.
Yeah, token Klingon. Just rub it in.
Enough to fulfill the contract.
Yeah, even though none of the scripts...
Put his actor's names in the credits.
Even though none of these scripts this early in the season actually have him involved.
Slightly underutilized, one might say.
Well, like, the decision to put Worf in season 4 came kind of late in the process. So, you know, they had all these scripts already set to go later on, none of them involving Worf.
Mm.
Whoops.
So, just replace extra number 1 with Worf. All right, so Kira gets a call. She sits down at the smallest view screen I have ever seen in Star Trek. I swear, it's like she's staring at a postage stamp in the middle of, like, a swimming pool.
She's watching Canadian broadcasts of Beast Machines episodes.
Yeah. Those are the days.
And she gets a call from that guy.
Yeah, so Rat Fink appears on screen. I gotta say, even this actor is in here for like 2 seconds. What a great actor. I love this guy's character.
He is...
everyone loves Bob Newhart.
He was the Zach Dorn in that season 2 episode of Next Generation.
Hmm. Well, whoever the hell it is, I like the character. So the smuggler guy, who apparently is old friends with Kira, says, hey, I may have found some wreckage from that thing you're looking for. I'm not bringing it to you. You got to come to me. And she's like, oh, I'll be right there. And they do make a little token reference to the Tholians chasing him, which I thought was kind of cute.
I mean, you probably
the
don't
Tholians.
Want to be, you probably
Thank
don't
God
want
it's not the brain.
You probably don't want to be caught
just
by
wait.
The... You probably don't want to be caught by the Tholians, because, like, you know, hostile
They're
atmosphere,
hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do terrible things to you. All right, so...
watch the Tholian web.
Wait, what, who?
They do terrible things, like make you watch the Tholian web.
Yeah.
The most anticlimactic fucking episode ever.
I used to love that episode so much when I was a kid, too.
We're in danger. Now we're not. Yay!
Woo!
And that's it. Good job, writers. All right, well, let's skip through the credits a little bit, shall we? This credits are like 15 minutes long. All right, so then we open up
read every single one of those credits. Read them off.
Oh, I'm gonna. So we open back up on DS9. With Odo talking to Kira, Kira's like, well, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to look for this ship. I've got another lead. Odo's like, okay, good luck. And she's like, what, that's it? He's like, yeah, you're going to go anyway, so I have to make my token present, so good luck. And I forget how...
I feel like Odo's reaction is like, uh-huh, yeah, well, whatever.
Yeah, I'll see you when you get back. Hurry up. One thing I did notice in watching this episode, and this may sound a little creepy, when I was watching this as a kid, you know, when it aired, Kara always seemed like such an older woman to me. But now I'm watching these episodes, she's really kind of cute. She's not nearly as old as she used to be.
We get older, but the Kiras stay the same.
Ah, pedantry.
I wonder what that nose would feel like. Never mind.
Okay, Dawn.
You need some cream corn with that.
Like a xylophone. So then we
skeleton
jump ahead.
Xylophone.
So we jump ahead to Kira's quarter. She's packing. Sisko comes by and goes, "I've looked into this. Thanks for letting me know. You're gonna go." And by the way, yeah. By the by, he's gonna like inching towards the door. Kardashians want to go with you. He's like, no. He's like, no, we can do this. The Kardashians want to go too because it was like their ship that went missing, even though it had Bajoran prisoners on it. So he's like, look, you guys aren't in war anymore. You got to work together. And Kira very, maturely goes, yeah, you're right. Okay, fine.
But if they're not here in 2 days, I'm leaving without them.
Yeah, 52 hours. It was like, really? All right.
They're light years apart. What time to even get dressed?
Yeah. Also, how did they get Kira's hair to do this thing that it's doing? Her hair distracted. Think so? Because it looks like it's just, like, crunchy.
It's 3D printed.
You know, in the first season, before they gave her the, like, slimmer uniform, I always thought that the material looked a lot like the upholstery of the Buick we had in the 90s.
It probably was. So this frees up Sisko to go have his B-plot.
The best B-plot.
Oh, my God.
It's a big plot.
It's a very big plot.
This is so stupid, but at the same time, it's so great.
It kind of is. It's like, oh, yeah, it goes, well, I'm watching this. I'm going, oh, come on. This is such melodrama. Then I think it back to my own life and I go, no, this shit's happened before. This is perfectly fucking reasonable and realistic.
Yeah, what did your fiance think about this part of the episode?
She didn't say a word, and thank God.
But was she just staring at you at times?
No, no, no. She was just
nodding knowingly.
No, she just kind of. One of these days, you stupid men will get it. Yeah, all right. So, point is, Cassidy. Go ahead.
Cassidy runs up and catches Sisko and Dax and says, "Hey, guess what? I'm getting a job here in Bajor. Isn't that great? I'll be here all the time."
And the look on Sisko's face.
So all of the Sisko's like just sort of freezes, like, "Oh, fuck." And Dax helpfully chimes in, "Well, where are you going to live? How about on the station?"
I'm sure the station commander could find you quarters here.
Yeah, if he weren't a complete dick.
If he really cared about you, he'd do this.
So,
but, you know, okay, otherwise, I guess...
The thing I love is that this is not Dax being incompetent, because she's old enough to know better.
Oh, she knows exactly what she's doing.
What she's doing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Oh, and I like that the lead into this, too, is, oh, I don't know, I guess I'll live in my car or something.
Yeah. Live on my ship, I suppose. Uh-huh. Little martyr. You gotta pull that little martyr card, you know. Get sympathy to help influence the decision. So here's my question about this whole B plot, because it's gonna move on very quickly. Why would Sisko care? What else is he doing with his time? What other like people is he banging?
Okay, here's the thing you need to understand about this
later on.
Here's the thing you need to understand about this, Scott. It's a big step.
Well, he's got big feet.
So that's settled. Sisko's going to Then up in the ops, who's going on this trip with Kira?
Well, I guess we'll find out since the Cardassian ship has arrived, and hey, the passenger wants to beam straight to ops. Because we can't afford to waste any more scenes.
And plus, what's the ultimate punctuation than to have Goldacott beam in carrying a duffel bag?
Mm-hmm.
So, Kira, let's go!
Ba-dum-bum-ba-dum-bump. Cut to the runabout. Did we lose Scott?
Scott.
Did he take too big a step?
No. Hello.
There you are. Okay. He disappeared.
Oh, okay. I thought you guys were just ignoring me.
Well, I guess not Scott, usual. I guess Scott is our paladin tonight.
Apparently.
Talking into the void.
Well, I fixed my Scott problems. Now it's Scott's turn to have Scott problems. Mm-hmm.
And Paladin had problems before you came on. And then we all had problems.
I think even after this episode, we're all going to have a lot of problems.
That's true.
I don't think that's going to change.
Well, I'll be thinking about that Sushi 69 all night.
That's the name of my new album. Don't be leaking it yet. Don't be leaking Sushi 69.
But I coined the phrase Sushi 69. It's my property.
I'm going to pay you royalties. Of every copy I sell, you will get a portion. You'll get a percentage.
Spotify really pays out, too. You'll get pennies.
Yes. Pennies on
but
the plate.
They'll be wheat pennies.
Ooh, for my collection.
All right, so on the runabout. So we finally have like a Family Guy, Brian and Stewie trip episode.
No.
They're going to have a musical number toward about three quarters of the way through. And one person does both the voices. All right.
I mean, I'm totally
and
behind.
And they're going to overrun a joke, have a 60
fight?
Minutes of barfing at finding when they realize someone's a trans woman.
Yeah.
No, like, I'm you behind know... Fort Max here on the whole, you know, aversion to Family Guy references. But at the same time, I would totally dig the Kira Ducat musical number part.
Right. Some of them sing about being best of friends from worlds apart or something, literally, you know?
Yeah.
So this
the whole
is...
time trying to struggling to just keep from killing each other,
which is basically what was really happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now this episode, you know, in the runabout, to me, just the dialogue between these two was some of the most compelling stuff in the entire episode. Having them go back and forth and see the occupation from different sides and how they approach it from completely different viewpoints. This is such great writing. I love this shit. Because they just actually wrote these characters as fully fleshed beings, and I love it.
You know, we may have burned your society to the ground, but we brought you a lot of technology you didn't have.
Yeah. You were stagnant. You were just peaceful and reclusive.
We gave you a reason to do things.
Yeah. You should thank us for occupying your people and turning you into slaves.
I mean, he said everything but that, yes.
And he's so sincere about it. He means every word of it. Like, it's just an obvious truth to him.
Yes.
And I like how...
And in some ways, he is correct.
No, he is. Yeah, he is. His point of view is obviously skewed, but, like, I don't think it's untrue that the Bajorans just were developmentally stunted at the time the Cardassians arrived.
Well, what's that famous line? You're not wrong. You're an asshole, but you're not wrong. Something to that effect. So Kira, you know, she manages and she gives it right back to him. They look at this from both sides, and both are equally legit. And it's just amazing how well it interplays with each other.
Mm-hmm.
I particularly love, though, how like they're still basically in the same roles they were in the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
Where Ducat is superior, and Kira is feeling attacked and aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and defensive and lashing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, like, just in a thematic sense, Ducat is the embodiment of the Cardassian occupation because he was established as being the boss of that whole operation. And Kira is our point of reference for the Bajoran resistance. So just on a thematic level, putting the two of them together like that, like, unless you totally fuck up what you're doing, you are not going to get anything but great material out of that pairing.
Yes. Many other shows would take this kind of potential and completely waste it, though. I mean, we were talking before we started recording about other shows that waste this kind of potential. This was what made this show so special.
Yeah, the writers knew exactly what they were... They knew exactly what they wanted to say and the best way to put the characters in the position to say it.
Mm-hmm. It's always been my theory, and I may have mentioned this before, but I've always found the easiest way to write fiction is to have great characters with goals and feelings and intentions on stuff, and then just put them in a bowl together and watch them fight. Just let them do their natural thing. Just let the characters be themselves, and the conflicts will arise naturally and be believable.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a perfect example of that.
I want to point out that as much credit as we give for Dukat, I don't think Nana Vistar gets nearly enough credit for doing Kira. So I bet you in real life she is nothing at all like Kira.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Kira is such a well-defined character that it really feels like a real person.
Mm-hmm.
You ever the illusion of acting never drops on her.
No, it doesn't. Right. And I've read a lot of the background stuff and, you know, like snippets of interviews. And like over the course of the series, she really tried to, you know, get in the head of figure out who Kira was as a person, basically doing what Scott's saying, but from the actor point of view.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, Kira was real in her head and she could draw from that to get the right way to react to this stuff, especially Dukat. Because like one thing she had said on a few occasions, I think, like, you know, even in the parts of Deep Space Nine where Dukat was played kind of sympathetic and, you know, like they were trying to make him redeemable,
humanize him,
like Nana Vistar was saying, you know, no matter what they do, Kira can never see him as anything but Hitler, essentially. You know, like they will never have a good relationship because that's always what he's going to be to her, no matter what.
Right, but that's a legitimate stance, though. It's not exactly like that's forced. It's not silly. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
No, but like it's not something that she was told, you know, this is how this is going to be. That's something that just she came up with herself, like something she understood of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And having that depth of understanding, you know, that really goes to how convincingly she played Kira through the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
But see, Kira is not just her hard edges, though. It's also how she handles her softer and more human side, mm-hmm. too, as well.
Yeah, no, I was just using that as one example, because, like, it's just, you know, she made all these connections in her head to help bring Kira to life in her performance.
Right. But, I mean, when you think of Kira, the first thing you think of is her as the hard ass,
mm-hmm.
the badass resistance fighter who is always angry. But she has a lot of stuff where, you know, where she is emotional and is reacting to things, you know, and, you know, getting hurt when the Vedic died and shit like that, where, you know, but it still feels right for the character. It doesn't feel out of place.
Yeah. No.
That she can marry both those things to a convincing human being is great acting.
Yes, it is. My whole overall point was just she's a good actor because she knows how to find the reality of the character she's playing.
Yeah.
And this is, and even to the larger point, that you can have a great actor that can do very well with crappy lines or crappy direction. But when you have good writing, a good actor, and good direction all moving to the same beat, it becomes amazing. Yeah, you get this. This is what you get.
Yeah.
It's compelling and interesting and good.
Like, this season 3, 4, 5, and 6 are the, like, strongest of Star Trek in general, honestly. Mm. But seasons 4 and 5 in particular, I think, are where Deep Space Nine always was bringing its strongest game.
Yeah.
You know, I've never really sat down and just watched DS9 as like a continuous thing.
Mm-hmm.
I probably need to do that.
Yeah, you should.
Uh-huh.
I've seen all the other ones as a continuous line, but I've never done it with DS9. I've always kind of hit bits and pieces and seen it kind of out of order and got enough to understand what's going on, but never watched it as a complete unbroken narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I envy you because you got a chance to experience it correctly for the first time.
Yeah. While eating lobster and getting a rim job. All right, so moving on.
So- What I love about this scene here in the runabout, though, is that it ends with Kira saying, I don't want to hear another goddamn word of you for the rest of the trip. And Dukat follows that and still manages to be irritating.
Because he's so goddamn smug.
But I love Kira.
Oh, Kira's pleased, though.
Yeah, I love her last line. Hey, we just might both survive this trip after all. She had another great line in that scene, too, which was, Sisko was right about you. You are in love with the sound of your own voice.
Yes.
Which is also kind of mean because it's kind of throwing Sisko under the bus. It's kind of like, oh, come on, don't drag him into this.
I don't think Dukat's under any illusions.
No, I know. It's just funny. It's like, this other person thinks you're an asshole. It's like, oh, come on, you know. It's like, boy, you're right. Hey, Mickey, XV's a real dick. You know, it's like,
I know, hey, right?
Yeah,
no, no, XV is dicks.
Yes, plural.
Plural. It's a bag of dicks. Speaking of a bag of dicks, let's go to Sisko's quarters.
Okay.
So this is where he acts like a bag of dicks.
So you cast your Indiana, and she's like, so I was thinking about what Dax told me about getting a spot to live here on the station.
Right.
What do you think about that?
He's like,
it's
great.
It's a big step.
Like, the one on the moon. That was a big step for mankind. You know, it's pretty big. He's like, well, I think it's great.
Good big step or a bad big step? Oh, it's...
It's a giant step.
Yeah, for all of mankind. But she immediately, though, I really get the feeling that Cassidy is, like, looking for a reason to be pissy about this.
Well, okay, so, like, from the first scene where this came up, like, she saw Sisko was not reacting the way she had hoped he would.
She saw that he was not saying something.
Yeah.
And she
was very actively hiding what he was actually thinking instead of being honest with her. And she's got a point there.
Uh-huh. And I still think, like, you know, she had an expectation of what she thought he should be saying to her.
Which is an actual answer.
Not just an actual answer, but, like, having some positivity about it. Because it, like, we kind of glossed over the scene with Sisko and Dax where this all started. It's kind of, like, the whole opening of that was talking about how serious Sisko is with Cassidy at this point, and he was kind of not. But it's obvious she kind of is already.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole gulf comes in, because she's expecting him to be at the same point she is in this relationship and be really thrilled that she's going to be around a lot more because she's going to be working on Bajor.
Because when you want to go get warm and fuzzies, you want to get it from Benjamin fucking Sisko.
I mean, you could do worse.
Maybe she just likes Cajun food.
Who doesn't?
I mean, do you know how hard... Do you know how hard it is to find a man who can cook?
And don't you want to hear Avery Brooks' voice talking to you while you're being made love to?
I mean, well...
I mean, the only thing better than that would be Keith David.
I mean, that goes beyond, like, you know, gender lines. I could get a book on tape and, you know.
Well, I'd like it if Avery Brooks
belt
was, like,
one out to him months. Read the Farmer's Almanac. Yeah.
On Wednesday, if the sun sets to a red sunset, there'll be rain the next day.
But you have to be doing it on a live stream.
Enjoy the harvest moon. Mm.
Introvert.
Okay.
So, well, no, I want Avery Brooks, like, his voice, yeah, during that moment, but giving me, like, encouragement and advice. Okay, now what you're going to want to do is this. Okay. Rub it counterclockwise.
A little to the left.
Yeah. All right, so now we
it's
jump.
It's a Cajun spice. Pow!
Don't think of baseball. Don't think of baseball.
Now I just envision Sisko having the 21st century version of Emeril's cooking show.
Yes.
Yeah, but see, that makes me think of the Futurama version of it, where he uses, like, the weasels.
That's Spice Weasels.
Yeah, Spice Weasels, that's right.
No, see, that would be a great thing for, like, you know, after Sisko comes back from his ascension or whatever at the end of the series.
Spoilers!
And, you know, he's trying to make his life on Bajor, so he starts a cooking show.
Yeah.
What if it's more like Good Eats?
Emissary Live.
Yes. he's like doing an Alton Brown Star Trek show, but he's doing transtemporal cooking with nonlinear time.
Oh my god, that is awesome. So now that your water has been at a boil, but we just started. Well, now as we watch the water turn into ice while sitting on the countertop, oh, brilliant. Non-temporal cooking, Alton Brown. You're a genius! Okay, I want to stop watching this and watch that show Hey Mickey just invented.
Okay, so we need to reach back and get the cornmeal out of these chips.
Oh, I think I said the cream corn out of the mouth. Okay, moving on. So we make it to the Badlands, where Raska...
You mean Sisko's relationship?
Oh! Salty.
But yes, the scene ends with Kathy storming out on dinner.
Yeah.
But she doesn't take the bottle of wine with her, and I think she's made a mistake here.
Yes. Well, see, the thing is, though, as we learn later on, she knows exactly what she's doing. The manipulative bitch.
That's why she should have taken the wine bottle with her. I mean, this was all calculated, you know.
All right, so they...
But was it replicated wine?
Probably not. I mean, yeah, Sisko grows vegetables to cook with. Like, he doesn't use all replicated stuff when he cooks. And Bajor makes wine. I'm sure he can get some bottles sent up when he wants them.
Of course they make wine. They're religious.
Space Catholics.
I mean, they always talk about Bajoran spring wine. And I'm sure it's spring somewhere on that planet all the time.
But you don't want Borg spring wine because it's, you know,
springs.
All metal.
Yeah.
Right. The lever wine is much better. Okay.
I prefer sprocket beer.
That sounds delicious.
Not to be confused with cog ale.
I like grommet vodka.
You say grommet and all I can think of is the vomit grommet.
I don't know what that is.
You never heard of the Vomit Comet, the zero-G plane?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Grommet sounds like vomit, too, so...
See, when I say Grommet, the first thing I think of is the wrong trousers.
Yeah, exactly.
That's also valid.
Yeah.
Anyway, in the Badlands, they met up with Art Carney, and he pointed them to the right planet.
Yeah, so they get there. Dugat scans it and goes, yes, this is from the ship we're looking for. Let's go deeper into the other side of the Badlands to some ship. And then they go. So I did like the little interplay with Raska, the smuggler guy, and Dugat. Dugat's like, yeah, you're like wanted for, you know, for all these crimes. I could arrest you, but I don't care.
And Raska's all, I wish I knew he was coming. I could have got a lot of money for him.
Right. But kind of, they at least pointed that out. Like, uh-huh. You know, this isn't going to go smoothly. If situation were a little different, this would turn out a lot differently. But I like how they at least mentioned it and just gloss over it. So we weren't going, well, what the fuck? Don't they hate each other? Why wouldn't he attack him? Why wouldn't this? You know, well, they actually pointed out, well, here's the situation.
I mean, I like, too, that it's not just Kira and Dukat interacting. There is at least one other Bajoran involved. And it's kind of playing the reality of, yeah, there is a peace treaty between them now. Probably not many people are actually happy about that, but there's a peace treaty now.
Yeah. Oh, I think they're happy about it, but they wish they could do things in lieu of it. Like, I would still like to kill every Cardassian I can find, you know, as long as they can't attack us back. But yeah, I mean, all the acting is just really fantastic. So he bought the wreckage off some Ferengi, whatever, hoob-da-doob-da-dooba. Dozaria?
Anyway, so they head off to Tatooine.
Yes.
Yeah.
They took a bongo from the scene and made the way to Tatooine.
So I love this scene when it first cuts down to them on this desert planet.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop's just smiling and whistling, going, so, hot enough for you?
Yeah, I know.
And oh, Kira's, so like, holding the finger up at him.
Yeah. It's so wonderfully hot here. I love it. He's like, oh, that's right. He's a lizard. That's right. He's reptilian. I like even the point, too. He's like, well, you know, it's not your fault. Cardassians are tougher than Bajorans, you know, physiologically speaking, which Kira doesn't, like, argue with. She's like, yeah, well, I can deal with it. You know, I mean, because it's like they both accept the fact. Oh, yeah. Also, the planet's covered in ionic interference for plot reasons.
Yeah, no beaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no beaming. Sensors are limited.
Basically useless.
Oh. Yeah. So they
finally do things the Lawrence of Arabia way.
So, that yeah, they on an entire planet, they beam down within 10 minutes of the ship wreckage.
Or land.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They had to land. You're right.
Yeah, you know, they land. They land, walk past the command center.
No, they weren't at Vasquez Rocks.
No, that's true. Yeah, that's one thing. We were looking at some of the landscape, and I was then investigating. He said, look, we're on an alien planet, which looks nothing like Southern California.
Exactly.
That's definitely not in Death Valley. So we cut back to DS9, which is where the real important thing is happening. And there's Sisko. For some reason, confiding in Bashir and Dax again. Because, yeah, well, I really want to talk to Dax about this.
But Bashir was just kind of there. More
like Sisko is sitting here moping, and Dax and Bashir is walking by, and Dax says, come on, let's go sit down and have some tea. And then she just sits down with him.
No, see, yeah. I see it more as Sisko wanted to talk to Dax about this, and Bashir just wouldn't go away.
Don't you have, like, medical reports to do?
No, nah. I got a staff for that.
Oh, I've got quite the staff. I'm genetically enhanced, you know.
Not yet.
Oh, he was always genetically enhanced.
So, yes, of either people I want getting relationship advice from, yeah, Bashir's on that list.
Well, there's one lower on the list than him.
Yeah, who shows up for their contractual obligation.
O'Brien?
Actually, no.
He wasn't even in this episode, was he?
Nope.
Oh.
I think he OD'd on corned beef and cabbage.
But Quark
OD'd on tragedy.
Quark had a great 90 seconds in this episode.
As he always does. Every second's a joy with him. So basically, they're sitting here just kind of making fun of him, going, yep, you're a guy. You acted like a guy. Ha ha, you're a man.
They're also running down
the track. Even Bashir is smart to realize, Sisko, you're an idiot.
Right.
Well, Bashir's
you have to you have to pretend your sincerity. You have to, you know, be as sincere acting as possible.
Yeah, Bashir's banged a lot more women than Sisko has.
Hmm.
He even banged that zero-G cripple.
Uh-huh.
My God, what?
Yeah, that was an episode.
Yep.
Yeah, apparently I do need to watch the series episode.
That was season 2?
Yep.
Wow. Yep. Was it censored? Or did you get to see everything?
It was kind of floaty.
I do like how Quark is just like, yeah, women leave us, but that's what holosuites are for. They basically masturbate.
Well, that's Riker's philosophy. No, it's just it's the whole Ferengi perspective on relationships. She doesn't think you're seeing her enough? See her less.
Yeah, it's all about control.
Take her gifts back.
I don't know why they even give her gifts. I mean, they're not allowed clothes anyway, so.
It's not a gift per se. It's a contractual obligation.
Right.
I am paying you this rose. In return, I expect a rim job. Walks.
Ah, so basically they're like beta human males then, I see. I've been nice to her enough, now she owes me sex. So there's a lot of Star Trek nerds watching this going, wait, that's not the way it works? But I'm such a nice guy.
Not. They're nice to girls, they never get sex.
Exactly. I'm so nice to girls, why don't they like me? All right, so we're back on the desert planet with something interesting going on.
People problems.
So they come across the wreckage.
Oh, you have a penis? Let's fuck. Okay.
Hey, what a coincidence. Me too. Hey, does it feel good when you touch it? Yeah, me too. Awesome. Yeah.
Hey, do you like cream corn?
Do I? I figured someone in Cosgrove just got really weird.
Want to go out for some cream corn?
Do I?
Every time Freakazoid always starts kind of going downtown, he's like, hey,
stop
with it. Yes, Ed Asner eating cream corn and getting a rim job.
You know, that sounds oddly credible.
Can that be the episode title?
No.
Actually, the only thing less depressing than that is the fact there are several dead bodies buried under the sand here.
Oh, yeah, because they find the ship by basically walking off the edge of it.
Yeah, well. So then they find a ring of graves. Kira's like, well, I'll help you dig them up so I identify. And then Dukat goes, whoa, 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 whoa.
What the shit you think you're doing?
Yeah, you can't touch our dead bodies. It's very sacred to us. I like how he's very kind of exasperated, not with her, but almost like with himself. He's like, no, I can't. You know, it's a thing. And she's like, okay, whatever.
Now I have to do it.
Yeah. She's like, fine, I'll be on the computer. So he digs it
it's
up.
It's not that I don't want you around here for my secret discovery. I've got to make up something convincing to get you to go away.
It's also, like, also they kind of throw in, yeah, Dukat kind of knows Bajoran culture.
Well, he should after occupying the planet for a decade or so.
But Kira would not expect him to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, nobody would expect him to. It's always been kind of a thing that Dukat took an interest in Bajor while he was there.
A very personal interest in some cases.
Well, yeah, I mean, more than average.
Very personal.
But I also like the way he's digging up these graves and he finds furniture. He finds jewelry, but nothing else. No bones, no nothing else. Just...
Yeah, you know, you would think on a desert planet where it's all dry and everything, it would take a while for decomposition to set in.
Well, the native desert uses every part of the corpse.
Oh, okay.
But spits out the jewelry because it's indigestible. So another neat scene where they humanize Dukat a little bit. He's sitting there like just lost in thought, holding the thing. And Kira, again, as an intelligent person, knows exactly what's going on, but without being smarmy or poorly written.
Mm-hmm.
So she realizes, wait a minute, he cared about somebody on the ship, but she doesn't quite really know the relationship yet. But she quickly figures it out. So as it turns out, dun dun dun, Dukat's half-Bajoran daughter was on this ship. What?
Also what? His Bajoran mistress, but she's dead now.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. Moving on. Oh, thank you. Never bring it up again.
He apparently had nose ridge fever.
It does kind of freak me out, though, that they're genetically compatible.
Well, there's a lot of species that are genetically compatible for reasons.
Yeah, but I mean...
Because they all come from the same base race, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Even Cardassians, though? I thought they evolved from lizards.
Well, the Cardassians were there in that Next Generation episode, so I guess.
Oh, that's true. And, but the thing is, what I understand about Cardassians is they evolved from lizards. Why are there still lizards? Checkmate. Sorry.
Too shitty.
All right, so he dug up all the earrings so Kira could identify them so she can figure out who's on here. And she is walking in this desert in this sand with some serious heels, by the way.
So I like that Kira's like, okay, well, you got a mistress. That's not that uncommon. I can understand why they want to keep that secret.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's totally, yeah.
But why were you sending them to a penal colony?
You said penal.
I know.
So, yeah, they're kind of talking it out, sitting there, and she's trying to, like, suss out what's going on.
Dukat's like, no, you don't know the full story. This is actually embarrassing for me.
Yeah. So he's like, yeah, let's just get in the room about him. Scan around. She's like, no, we got to be here. So she gets a Cardassian. Is that a Bajoran or a Cardassian scanner?
Well, it's probably Bajoran. Yeah. She brought her own equipment.
Yeah. So she's trying to get it up, and it's like, oh, well, Bajoran agents have this special
isotope.
She's
trying to get it up.
Yes. So she's trying to find a Bajoran separatist, have this isotope that she can track. through subdermal implants. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it's nice that they have this radioactive material that will linger in the air for, you know, maybe years.
Well, at least, what, six?
But won't poison the person it's implanted in.
Right.
Oh, it does. The Bajorans were just very stupid.
They weren't very advanced before the Cardassians arrived.
Well, the problem with the Bajorans is all those nose bridges, that's just cancerous.
Oh, okay.
We're going to inject you full of thorium.
Sounds badass, doesn't it? Thorium?
Does that mean
power out lightning?
Yeah. Can I lift the hammer now?
Absolutely.
Just get a firm, manly grip.
Okay, let me see if I can get it up.
As Toa slowly slips into a gay porn podcast.
My work here is done.
It only took Mickey 6 years.
I've completely corrupted Kilby's podcast network. It's now just smut.
A completely corrupted podcast network.
There were rape gangs.
It was a completely failed podcast. Oh, so here we get the kind of some lighthearted bullshit in the episode where they go into a cave, Dukat sits on a spike of some kind, she bends him over.
And Jesus Christ, what the fuck did he sit on?
I know. Fine.
Does this plant have like naturally occurring daggers?
Yes.
And she just like he turns to look at her and she like pushes his face back down into the pillow and tells him to bite it. Oh my gosh. Bite the pillow, I'm going in dry. So they have a little lighthearted moment where they laugh and he's trying to, you know, dermally regenerate his ass cheek.
But it's not working. Yeah, he misses working because he forgot to turn it on.
Yeah, and he misses and then sews his asshole shut. Which is why he becomes such a prick in later episodes.
He'd been retaining for a long while.
I think this is the only Star Trek episode I've seen where someone's like rubbing their ass at the camera.
I know. It's so funny. So then they bond over eating field rations because they're both soldiers. Hoop-de-doo.
You say hoop-de-doo, but like, you know, it's one of those subtle points again. They're finding common ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though they still hate each other.
They're both in the same war.
Yeah.
You know? That's something they have in common. They were both in the same war on different sides. Mm-hmm. But like how Kira's like,
Kira ate Cardassian rations that she stole from dead Cardassians.
Yeah.
All true.
That she, and, you know, from dead Cardassians, she probably killed with weapons she stole from other dead Cardassians. It's the circle of life.
I like this. So they sit down the rations. They're like, ha ha ha, good times. And then she goes, whew, serious face. You have a mistress, and then you have a daughter. Damn it.
You're like, well, that's cool. I can see why you want to save your daughter. And it's like, nope, well, I'm here to kill her.
Which I thought was interesting even at the time. They kind of revisit that point later in the episode. He's like, why would he even tell her that? Like, because he doesn't think that she's going to care? Maybe he doesn't.
Maybe.
It's because he wants her to stop him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's said later on. Say, now I know why you're in such a hurry to find the survivors.
But yes, I've got to make sure that bitch is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then Kira later, I think, makes the point, you know, okay, find her, rescue her, just send her away again like you were going to in the first place.
Yeah. I'd like, and again, Dukat's character, the acting, Mark Lamma does such a great job of him. He leans his head back, closes his eyes, and kind of takes a breath and goes, no, I'm not here to save her. The look of pain and the resigned look in his face and the way he acts that out is just so good. It's like, I have to, you know, just emotes so well.
It's not easy to do that under all that prosthetic either.
I know. That's what's so great about it. I mean, even with his eyes and the way he breathes and everything, he just lives the character. Uh-huh. So they just cut back out. Now they're outside walking in the sun again because apparently they didn't talk for the 12 hours they were asleep in the cave.
Well, and Kira is carrying it to Dukat the whole time. I'm not going to let you do it. No, it's not right.
Yeah, and I think this is where they talk about, you know, why not just send her away again?
Right. And wait, aren't Cardassians all about family? He's like, yeah, I've got, you know, a wife and 7 kids.
And that's when you find out Cardassians are Catholic. No, like, all Cardassian families have, like, multiple children.
Yeah, yeah. I just assume the females laid eggs and then the males came and, you know, germinated them later.
Man, no wonder like all Cardassians are so semen angry. Over them.
Exactly.
No wonder they're all so angry.
They're like the Bukkake masters of the galaxy. Sushi 69. Oh, yeah. So he's complaining about his job isn't as secure as it was, and his enemies will use a half of Jorn daughter against him, so she has to die and dip it
down. I might get a demotion.
Right. It might hurt my career, so I have to kill my daughter.
Well, okay, I guess that's your fault for supporting the coup against your original government.
Yeah.
Didn't really think that one through, did you?
Yeah. And Kira just nails him on it, too. She's like... Poor Dekat tries to explain. You know, he actually seems pained by all this, which I like.
Mm-hmm. He's and feeling... Kira just sees it for the bullshit that it is. Like, this is fucking dumb.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. This bitch is your daughter, and you love her, and you're not going to kill her. That's in the story. Stop it.
I'll take her back to Bajor with me.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, yeah, because that's going to work out really well. Because
your people aren't horrible racists.
Oh, I think a half-breed of the race that occupied them probably don't do too well.
Well, probably not, but, like, if... I want to think if the Bajorans were, you know, the spiritually enlightened people they want to be, you know, they would be understanding of the outcast half-Cardassian children who can't go back to Cardassia.
Yes, because really religious people are never hypocrites.
Sad
if only
true.
There was some culture in the universe that was just accepting of all races, no matter what planet they came from.
Well, the Klingon Empire has all kinds of races in it. That's not what you're
no,
talking
don't.
About.
Just Klingons.
Oh, no, they only let Klingons on the ships.
Yeah.
Everyone else has to stay back and work in the factories. All
basically,
right,
the Klingons have a lot of China.
Because
you mean Chinese?
No, I mean like lots of planets that are China.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Space Chinas, you know.
Space Chinas. Which is a little different than Space Pachina, which is what Riker's always after.
China's in space.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so we get back to DS9.
Now I'm just imagining the Chinese version of Brave Star.
Blave Star?
Oh, God, Scott, no. That's racist.
That's almost as racist as a Bajoran.
Yeah, whatever. It's all this stuff about spoonheads anyway, so I don't care. All right, so we finally get back to DS9, to Sisko and Black Wesley.
But at least Deep Space Nine had the sense to know that, you know, Jake's capacity as a character is a little bit limited in general. Let's not use him all the time.
Yeah, but we're still going
to
Wesley.
Let's not make him the solution to every problem.
That too.
Except in this scene.
In fact, let's not make him the solution to any problems, because basically they never do.
Right, he's a child, and they're the cause of problems, not the solution.
He's a child for half the series, and then he's a young adult who can't get his shit in order for the rest of the series.
So this is a perfect encapsulation of the 90s.
Yeah, pretty much.
At least for me and Hey Mickey.
But, like, we talked about this in the Sisko Builds a Boat episode, but, like, when you look at it as a whole, they made a very realistic character arc for Jake from start to end of series.
They did. They did. I'm throwing shade, but they did.
Which is probably why it's not all that interesting to see Jake in any one specific episode in general. Because he's not really doing much, because it's just, you know, part of the overall growth of the character over 7 years.
Yeah. And although,
but it's nice, though, in that he is a regular person.
Yes, exactly. We talked about that in Sisko Builds a Boat, too.
Yeah. The only thing that's just weird to me about this scene is he talked to Nog, they talked about all this kind of stuff, and he comes at it with the simplicity of a child, of a young person who hasn't been in a lot of relationships, going, oh, well, you just do this, 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 and everything will be fine. But he does it in such an almost kind of condescending way to his own dad, which I think is kind of funny. He's almost like
an idiot.
Yeah, he's kind of shitty to it.
Yeah, it's realistic, though, because, like, of course he's going to think he's smarter than his dad, because he's got this answer really simple. Because he's not weighed down by the baggage of, A, having to live in the situation and, like, the preconceptions he's bringing into it.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. It's just, I just thought it was funny just the way he's, just the attitude, I don't know.
It's like, well, you know, me and Nog thought about talking to Cassidy ourselves, but we thought it'd be better coming from you.
Whoa, hold up, you and Nog were talking about my relationship?
Right, yeah. Because now he's thinking, okay, I have to kill I have to kill at least 8 people to keep this from getting out any further. There's going to be a lot of accidents in the docking ring.
Bashir or Quark first? Decisions, yeah. Decisions.
Bashir.
Yeah.
All right, so now we get back to Planet of the Yellow Filter.
That's more orange, I think.
Don't get pedantic with me, bitch.
I'm not done. Well,
you can get a little pedantic. It's fine.
Now that's how, that's how you get sent to jail,
but
Scott.
Isn't he? But aren't you older than him?
So, damn it! I just got XV's joke. God damn it! Look, it was just a little sex, okay? All right. So now the one thing this episode absolutely did need is the Breen.
Breen.
Yes.
Well,
oh, I mean, no, not the Breen. They're terrifying.
We have the scene with the Breen.
I mean, the Breen are useful here just because, like, they're faceless, essentially. Mm-hmm. All you need is weird costumes, no makeup effects.
Yep, and not even any voices, although they grunt like men, which is weird. They don't have, like, that digitized voice.
This was the first on-screen appearance of the Breen.
Wait, really?
So they didn't really have that voice filter thing worked out.
Really?
Now, the Breen had been mentioned as far back as, I think, season 5 of Next Generation. But yeah, yep. Up until now, they had not actually been seen.
I did not
know. Empty threat of the Breen.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I had no idea this was the first actual on-screen appearance of the Breen. This is historic.
It's historically dumb.
They are kind of pushovers. They make a point of them being, oh, it's at least 50 degrees too hot for them out here. I'm like,
That's 50 Kelvin? Degrees Celsius.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be
think
like
about
a mega...
that. Yeah.
So, yeah, but I thought the Breen were, like, really cold, like absolute zero cold, like Kelvin, not like Celsius.
I don't know about that, but I know the Breen are several different species.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they're a collective species, like the Federation.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Federation isn't a species.
I said the Breen is not the name of a species. The Breen is the name of an empire.
Oh, the collective. The Breen, was it collective? What do they call themselves?
Confederacy, I think.
Confederacy. Yeah, you're right. Confederacy.
Yeah, and that kind of goes with my theory about this, too, that the people in the suits are not actually Breen.
Because they don't sound like them. They just grunt like people.
Well, and there's also...
could be, yeah.
There's also the thing, like, they say nobody's ever seen a Breen outside of its environment suit.
Right.
But, you know...
So anybody could be inside that suit.
It's the confederacy of cold species, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, I mean, you can probably adjust the thermostat in the suit. But, I mean, how badass would it be to have an air-conditioned suit anyway?
Especially in the desert? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
A little talcum powder, you'd be set.
Uh-huh.
Although, I do say that when they take the face mask off, it's still a really cool-looking suit.
Oh, it is.
The costume's awesome.
Actually, it's kind of a cool-looking suit with it on, too.
Well, yeah, that too. I'm just saying, even when they take it off, it's still cool-looking.
I like it better without the helmet, because the helmet is too Princess Leia.
Yeah, Bossk.
It's way too Princess Leia.
I guess. Yeah.
It's still a cool helmet design, but it's way too on the nose.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Z's well, it is. Have you seen the size of that thing? That's like a huge nose.
Oh,
let's blow this thing and go home. All right, so they get in the caves, they find the slaves, they attack some Breen, take their stuff. They're like, hey, we're here to rescue you. Okay, good. More Breen show up, and now there's a fight.
And, oh, and I'm here to kill you.
Yeah, pew, pew, pew. They're moving forward. Okay, they get the slaves guns. They take even more guns, and now they cut a little slave rebellion, which is awesome.
Who cares? The important thing is Dukat finds his daughter.
Okay, fine. Fine.
That's all filler, and you know it.
No, I do. Okay, so she's innocently like getting a bucket of water, and he sneaks up behind her, puts a gun to her face.
Hey, baby, miss me?
Yeah, hail to the king. And then she looks just pure Cardassian to me. I don't really see much Bajoran in her, honestly.
It's in the nose.
Yeah, probably.
Also, her Cardassian ridges are softer than I've pronounced.
Think so? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. She looks
like if you tumbled her in a river for a while.
And I would.
I mean, it's the same way like a half Klingon kid has less pronounced ridges on the forehead.
Right.
Well, some traits are dominant and some are recessive.
And some are proportional.
And some are gray. So the acting in this scene is also very good. The look on Zial's face, I mean, I think she just plays this very well.
This is the first of four Zials. I'm not surprised this one didn't have... I think this is the only appearance for this one.
What, they recast her?
Yeah, repeatedly.
Huh.
I never paid attention to that.
Yeah, it's hard to tell the prosthetics, I guess.
The one in season 6 was the one with the most appearances. Six? Five, maybe.
That's really kind of bad that I didn't even notice there's four different actresses playing the same role.
Years apart, weren't they?
The next one, I think, was in this season.
Recast her in the same season? Ouch.
Yeah, that... I wonder why. I mean, hopefully if it was like for like a good reason, like that actress got a better job or something.
I mean, like...
She got pregnant, so really it wasn't a good reason.
I don't know. I thought this Zial was kind of a little bit wooden.
Well, she's been a slave for 6 years.
I don't know.
I think you're just justifying it.
Yeah, maybe. Although it was kind of weird to me. It's like, you know, 2 seconds ago you had a gun to my face and I'm just so happy to see you. Hee-hee. Whoa, okay. But then again, she's half Cardassian, so maybe that's just, you know, way it works.
Well, and she's old enough to remember him.
Yeah.
From before, so, like, it's not like he's basically a stranger coming up to her. It's someone she remembers from before she was a prisoner.
Yeah. So now we get back to...
I imagine that love would have been amplified over time.
Well, yeah, like she says, like she fantasized every day that he was going to come save her one day.
Even though all the other Cardassians said that, you know, he would come and kill her instead.
Right. That's pretty heartbreaking dialogue, honestly.
Cardassians, though.
Yeah. Cardassians.
They know what's up.
They're practical.
Uh-huh.
They're down to clown. So we get back to DS9, and Cassidy's way of punishment makes Sisko hold a thing. Here, hold this.
Here, do manual labor.
Yeah.
I know that kills you.
You're a man. Hold this heavy thing. That's what you're good for, right? So he shows up and starts kissing her ass and trying to convince her that, you know, oh, I was so wrong, and herpader, and yeah, talk to Jake, and hepada.
You know, Jake's a lot smarter than you.
Yeah.
Must take after his mother.
Yeah.
You know, the one who's dead.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, that was like, ouch. Well, she wasn't so smart not to get assimilated by the Borg, now was she?
She didn't get assimilated. She just got blown up.
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that the Borg didn't pick up her corpse and reanimate it.
Exactly. Thank you. I don't think the Borg are going to let a good body go to waste.
Is it really that good after it's been, you know, seared by an antimatter explosion?
You only need so many parts. They replace most of them anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the thing, though. Like, can the Borg take a dead corpse and fill it full of nanites and actually make a useful drone out of it?
Probably.
Or does it have to be alive still?
I think it's just easier if it's alive.
If there were more seasons of Voyager, they probably would have happened.
Good point.
Don't say such terrible things like more seasons of Voyager.
Perhaps if there was a theatrical Voyager movie.
Ooh.
You shut your whore mouth.
Oh, man.
No, it's okay. We got Nemesis instead.
God, you keep making it worse.
It's already dead. Stop eating it.
Did you say stop eating it?
Yes, stop eating it. Stop eating that cream corn. I'm busy down here.
So, surprise, the reason why Cisco's hesitant about forming a real relationship with Cassidy is because his last girlfriend died.
Yeah.
He's afraid that's going to happen again and bum him out.
Because that would just suck.
Well, it's not like Picard's going to be around much.
I wish somehow there had been a running joke in Deep Space Nine that every time Cisco dates somebody, Picard somehow gets her killed.
Yeah, then he and Crusher can, like, go drink and commiserate.
Yeah, that's true.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that just needs to be a trait of Picard. He just gets everybody's boyfriends or girlfriends or spouses killed.
So that means he'd have to kill either Riker or Troy.
I think they're doing a pretty good job of doing that themselves. Running into planets and such. Mounting chairs and uncomfortable
accidentally
anchors.
Erased Geordi's holodeck program.
Well, I don't know. It said disk cleanup, and I clicked OK, and...
Right. I just did the prompt.
See, look. You knew exactly why,
Wait, holy shit.
Oh, what's his name? Irish guy.
O'Brien.
Yeah, we know exactly why O'Brien left.
Because he loved his wife too much.
Yeah.
Data and Yar hooked up.
Uh-huh.
And then the captain sent Yar down to the planet with the black sludge creature.
Uh-huh.
That's why Picard hates children. He just hates the idea of other people having sex.
Picard's such a prude.
It makes him just murderous.
What is he, a Quaker?
No, he's British.
No, he's French.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So French.
Well, in this 24th century, Great Britain conquered France.
So, I think it's funny the other way around.
No, if it was the other way around, he wouldn't have a British accent.
Oh. So, we got like 2 minutes left in this. Let's push on through. So, we get back to the promenade. They're on the upper level. So, we got Kira and Dax are walking along going, Dekat, such a prick. What a freaking asshole. Man, what a bitch he is. And then he's like standing, boom, right there. They look up and he's standing right there.
Oh, hi. We were just talking about you.
Face.
I mean, they were within like 5 feet of him, using him by name and laughing at him.
Good thing Cardassians don't have very good hearing.
What? I'm sorry. So, anyway. So, she's like, well, it's a good thing you didn't kill your daughter, huh? And he's like, yeah, about that. So, if this doesn't work out, it's on you. How does that make you feel? This is all your fault. That look he gives her is like, this is your fault.
And that look just kind of just bounces right off Kira's face. And she's like, uh-huh, yep. Congratulations,
well,
you did the right
course thing.
I'm great.
She would love it if it was her fault anyway, because if it goes wrong, Dukat's miserable.
Mm-hmm.
So she wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, but...
The other thing I took from this, too, is like, you know, Kira asks, so what do you think is going to happen when you take her home? And Dukat's all, he, you know, leans in like, I'll let you know. Like, from his point of view, Zial is now a linking element between them because Kira has ended up caring just in the effort to stop Dukat from killing her.
Yep. Yeah, their fates are kind of linked now. That's true.
I didn't read it like that. I mean, I see your point. Mm-hmm. I read it more as like, this is going to go like shit, and I'm going to let you know how it goes to shit, and you're going to pay.
Yeah, I'm like...
Or
I
you're
always...
going to see it because it's going to be all over the news.
Yeah, I mean, I've always took it more as Dukat was trying to find ways to form connections with Kira, and this was just a way for him to do that.
Really? Why would he want to do that? Said, why would he want to do that?
I don't know.
He wants to bone her?
I guess we'll have to find out in a later episode.
I don't know. I mean, watching more Star Trek, and I don't know. I think I'm way too cool for that.
This is interesting, because I totally see that, but the way Dukat is, I also see it as a threat.
To me, I honestly took it as, he put it this way, it's like, look, I did this thing because you told me to, so this is your responsibility, so you should feel guilty if anything bad happens. He, like, I think he put the moral weight back onto Kira. That's how I took it. He's like, yeah, I'll let you know what your decision fucking did to my life. Seriously.
I could kind of see it that way more than I could as, like, a threat, because I think if he was trying to make a threat, it would feel more overt.
Exactly.
Like,
there was a little bit too much subtlety in it.
I will tell you what about things that happen is not much of a threat.
Yeah.
But coming from a Cardassian, only speaks from the side of their mouths. Anything they say kind of sounds like a threat.
Yeah. Well, good morning sounds like a threat coming from a Cardassian.
Yeah.
Well, when they say good morning, though, it's with a U.
Good morning?
Yes. God, they're Swedish. The Cardassians are Swedish Catholics. I don't even know if that's a thing.
So,
say wait, 20 Bork Marys.
Do we know if Giga Beetle's a Cardassian?
He's a lizard, I think. So that's kind of... Lizards are the same thing as insects, right?
Yes. Yeah, beetles.
Yeah, I'm, that's how it works. That's why Kamen Rider Amazon say lizard, so yeah.
I thought he was a Blanka.
A what?
A Blanka.
I thought he was a Gorn.
Speaking of which, I got the Gorn chip today for Attack Wing.
I want to play that game so bad.
I couldn't resist the allure of a ship full of Tyrannosaur people.
Well, Scott, what you need to do is fly to Tennessee.
Yeah.
And then I'll come down and visit too, and we'll all play.
Oh, that would be so
great.
You have no idea how awesome that would be. Oh, my God.
And then take his Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, the entire thing. Yeah, good luck getting through customs with that. See if I can get that in the overhead baggage.
Why would you need to go through customs?
Because I'm in California.
Yeah, didn't you know Fort Max, California seceded from the U.S.?
It happened like 3 years ago. How did you not know about this?
It was right after they cracked.
Is this when Lex Luthor like did the earthquake thing to make it its own island?
Yeah.
Yes, because we're not making any more real estate, because that's a plot.
Or was it a Bugs Bunny situation?
Well, I did take a wrong turn to Albuquerque one time in my life, so I'm very proud of that.
You did that on purpose, though.
I did it on purpose, but it was so worth it.
If you do it on purpose, it's not really a wrong turn.
No.
Yes! It counts! You can't take that away from me. It counted. It's
the
still
GPS
real
says turn left, but I turned right.
Yep. And then I was going the wrong way in the street and almost killed a family, but whatever, it was worth it.
Almost.
Almost.
You know, when I was in Louisville, in downtown Louisville earlier this month, I saw the most amazing thing. Somebody...
A person with more than three teeth?
Yes, but what I was actually referring to was someone making a left turn on a red light legally.
Good.
Because of one-way roads?
Yeah, I never actually run into the situation of the one-way roads being arranged like that.
Oh, you should go drive downtown here.
No, that's okay.
Or if you really want to go insane, go to Knoxville.
I drove through Knoxville on the interstate. Does that count?
No.
Oh.
Downtown Knoxville is absurd.
It really is. I can vouch for that. It really is. The sprawl in the streets and the traffic is just insane. I don't know where all those people come from.
And they're all one-way roads, but they don't really alternate. It's kind of random when they change directions.
Oh. Do they change directions in the middle of a block?
Sometimes, yeah, like you have like two one-way roads coming into each other, and then you have to turn left or right like when they come to the stop. It's insane.
Good planning.
It's not like Boston level insane, but it's not good.
Boston, because fuck you. Because fuck you for wanting to know where you're going.
Boston traffic is terrifying.
I've never been.
Yeah, I've seen maps of their kind of street layout, and it looks like a colony of drunk ants made it.
I ended up there one time, and it was extremely unpleasant.
Mm. How unpleasant was it?
Well, leaving the airport, which is on an island, by the way,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
10 lanes of traffic condense into two in the span of, I don't know, about 70 feet. And then you go underneath the river through a tunnel mm-hmm. for about 3 miles.
Terrifying.
To get back to the mainland.
They couldn't have a bridge.
No, for some reason they decided they wanted to dig underneath the ocean or some shit.
I guess they were bored.
That's the great thing about playing Fallout 4, is I got to see Boston nuked.
Yeah, that's the only thing about that. Is like I've never actually been to Boston, so eh.
Always enjoyed. That was a great episode.
Yes. End of the story is that was a fantastic fucking episode, and I can't wait to see more of it. More of this storyline continue.
No, the end of the story is that Cassidy was going to take the job regardless of what Sisko wanted.
Right.
Basically, you know, screw you if you can't get your shit together.
Yeah. I'm a strong, independent woman. I don't need no man to tell me what I can do.
I got my work.
Yeah.
I've got a car to live in. It's got a toilet and everything.
So, yeah, really good episode.
By toilet, you mean transporter.
Yeah, whatever. Same difference.
So, what are we doing next week or next month or
say next,
next
episode.
Year?
Because then if you say next episode, it's always correct. Unless we never
Let's
record
do,
this again.
Indiscretion.
Oh, that's a good one. I know for a fact that's a good one.
There's a problem with that suggestion, Mickey.
What is it?
Next week's not a Deep Space Nine episode.
Right, it's time for Voyager, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
Scott sounds way too excited about Voyager.
I want a captain that drinks coffee. I like the fact that she drinks coffee. I find that relatable and enjoyable.
Are you done?
Never!
Okay, so since it's original series next week, I think we should do the Apple.
Okay.
Oh, it is original series next week?
Yeah.
Aw.
What do you mean, aw?
So what season is that?
I have no idea. Somebody else
like
look it up.
Two. Let's see here.
What's the apple? I don't think I've seen that one.
It's the one with the volcano and the orange people.
I have not seen it. So again.
Okay.
Well, it's not exactly a volcano, but it's like a mountain god thing. And there's orange people.
All right, so we're doing the asshole.
Always.
No, we already did that episode.
You have to be a little more specific.
Yeah.
Paper mache sphincter.
Oh yes.
Good memory, Fort Max. I wasn't even thinking of that. Although on reflection, I don't know why I wasn't thinking of that because I should be thinking of that all the time.
The Apple, here we go. Season 2, Episode 5. At least on Netflix, that's what it is.
And now Mickey can look it up on Memory Alpha to try to see if he knows what I'm talking about.
I'm not going to.
Oh, okay.
the thumbnail in Netflix is Spock looking like someone just gave him a Rochambeau.
Or was he eating cream corn?
It looks like he has a mouthful of cream corn. That's exactly the look in his face in that little thumbnail. Seriously, it is hilarious.
Somebody must have given him a rim job then.
That's kind of where I was going with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always kind of moving towards a rim job.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like right now, I'm slowly moving towards one. I don't.
There's just a butt floating towards your face very slowly.
No. Receiving.
Oh.
There's a tongue floating toward your ass very slowly. Yeah.
It's kind of like the pendulum, you know, slowly lowering down as time goes on. And
the tongue in the anus?
Right. Except with a tongue and anus. By Edgar Allan Poe. I'm so tired.
You're so tired, and it's only like 8 o'clock there.
Yeah, I know.
He's been awake for hours.
I had to pretend to work today, so.
I mean, think how Mickey feels. For him, it's like 11 o'clock.
I know how Mickey feels.
It is like 11 o'clock. And I had to look at Ben wearing one sock and Crocs today.
Wait, did he have a sock on with those?
Yes!
Yeah, did you not look at the photo?
Socks and Crocs, baby!
Not socks. Sock. Singular.
Sock and Crocs.
I looked at the picture, I didn't notice the one sock. No wonder Bach Cobb was so aghast. I have to go back to this now, hang on.
He's basically the Michael Jackson of Crocs.
Come on, load.
Oh, I love Bach Cobb.
Yeah, he's a weird little guy.
Yeah. How come there's no ketchup gas?
What?
Pardon?
Yeah, Bach Cobb is one of those people. I really do wonder, how does this guy's brain work?
I don't know.
I mean, literally, he just says, she's like, how did anybody think of this?
Okay, so to be fair, in my defense, like, the angle this picture's taken at, it's not the most immediately obvious there's not a sock on the other foot. I can see it now that I know to look for it.
Well, you're probably immediately drawn to his magnificent ass. This is what my eyes drawn to, but
no, I can't quite the photo. I can't quite see that around his midsection, I'm afraid.
Oh jeez.
No, so I'm just drawn to the shorts and Crocs. I wasn't really thinking about the socks in the Crocs.
He's kind very of a... He is kind of a fox, though. When he's a fox in the sock, wearing the Crocs. And I know what he enjoys most?
Cream corn?
Yeah.
He loves the Cox.
Cox cable internet?
Exactly. Huh. He likes all the channels he gets.
Yeah. Ketchup gas, okay. I'm not sure Bach Cobb actually understands what mustard is.
Please refrain from tasting the knob.
Oh, man.
Okay.
It's a Bach quote.
Yeah.
Oh.
Twizzlers are kind of gross, but I keep buying them because they're 30 cents off.
That just
he's like a slave to his passions.
That I mean that just
passions seems, are things that he hates.
Yeah, that just seems like a summation of his life.
Yeah.
He's
not even like a connoisseur of crap like Hey Mickey is. He's just weird
about it. Everything he buys.
I know. You enjoy the things that you hate.